This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. As I always promise, I try to find the most interesting people I can find on the planet. Well, tonight, I have a wonderful guest. His name is Gerald L. Hoover. I met him via LinkedIn. And I find people that kind of follow each other because they're maybe intrigued with the background. I follow people because I always find people interesting. And every now and then I find someone or someone finds me who is very, very interesting. Tonight, we're going to talk to Gerald about his endeavors, and I'm going to just list them because I don't know where to begin. I'll just say he's a best-selling award-winning author. He's also a motivational speaker, an adjunct professor, a filmmaker, and a sports writer. And I want to talk to him tonight about his book series. I had to decide within myself, like, what are you going to pick to talk to him about? So I decided that I wanted to talk to him about his book series, The Hero Book Series. Welcome to the show, Gerald. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, TQ. It's an honor.
The honor is mine. Tell our audience the premise behind this book series and the audience that you reach.
Sure. Well, it started, believe it or not, October 17th, 1983, when I first started writing it from a speech that I had written some months ago, before that, to where I actually started writing, where I put pencil to paper. Now, mind you, I said pencil. I didn't say typewriter or computer. I said pencil to paper because I was actually writing on an ironing board, right? I literally, because we lived in the projects at the time in Lebanon Towers in Mount Vernon. It was me, my sister, and my mom. My mother had taken my sister and gave her room. Okay. And I had my own room. And so my mother took a living room and made that her room. And so with that being said, the kitchen table where I could have written was always occupied in some way with traffic. And my mother slept in the living room. So she had the TV going and did her thing. And then my sister was in and out and so forth. So I said, I need somewhere where I can sort of cocoon myself to write in peace. So I used the ironing board, bought that in my bedroom. And I had to tie the bottom of the ironing board because it was sort of unstable. So I had to tie it so that it wouldn't collapse on me. And that's when I started writing pen to paper. Now, I mentioned something about a speech. What happened was my dad, unfortunately, he's no longer with us. He's been gone now almost 33 years. And he was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And he was a product of Vietnam and some other stuff that was going on back then. And he was a good man, I thought, but got into the wrong stuff and it sort of messed him up and it took away his manhood, if you would. And so I had written a book. I mean, I wrote the speech, not so much against him, but the speech was written so that I can tell young men and women not to go that route. Drugs and alcohol is not going to, you know, it's not going to be a helpful enterprise for you. And it was kind of sort of in the dawning of the crack era. You know, the crack was sort of coming in mid 80s and it was really like sort of rearing its ugly head. And so I was on a sort of a personal crusade to say no to drugs. And so the speech was written, but I had no platform by which to do it. They didn't podcast back then. We didn't blog. We didn't do things like that. And we barely even had fax machines. So I had nowhere to put this speech. Also, I had a speech impediment. I stuttered. So I knew that I had nowhere to put this speech. So one day on a basketball court in 4th Street Playground, I had this premonition. And it was godly premonition that basically spoke to me and said, put the speech to a character and let one of the characters give the speech. And so that's where the book My Friend, My Hero was born. I admit this as a way of encouragement. I wasn't a real book reader back then. I was always a good writer. You know, I could always put things in my head and just write. I always did good book reports and different things of that nature. But I did the book reports by cheating, meaning I would see a thick book, watch the movie, and just read the inner notes and get an A or B on a book report. I did that basically my whole life. But when I wrote my first draft, right, with pen, I wrote the first draft from cover to cover, if you would. I let an older cousin of mine read it. And he was a big time reader, very smart, and still is. I knew that he would give me a good opinion on it. And what I thought he was going to say was, "You are a great writer. Well, you've been all my life." He didn't do that. He basically knew that I wasn't a reader, because he can tell that there were some fundamental things that I didn't do, like put dialogue in quotes. I didn't properly indent. I mean, it was so many different things that I didn't do correctly that he can tell I wasn't a real reader of books. So he made me go on a crusade where he said, if you want to be a real writer, you got to be a reader. And of course, I'm thinking, like, why do I need to do that? I can just write books. But that's when you're talking like an 18-year-old, so you kind of know why. Yeah. And so long story short, I read those 5 books and 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, and then I understood what he meant. So he gave my draft back, and I went back and rewrote it by hand, and he can see the difference in that next draft to where he says, "Okay, now I'll help you." That's when he knew that I was really determined to be a writer, because not only did I listen to him, I improved, because he can tell that I listened to him, but I applied my own knowledge to it. In other words, I really, really, really worked at getting to become a better writer. And so that's when he said, "Okay, I'll help you." I had to go through all of that, read 5 books. And when I read them, I remember the first book was Miss Jane Pittman. And I remember I was trying to memorize almost every line in the book. It was almost as if I was trying to recite it, because my thinking was, he's going to ask me questions after I read this book. Turns out, TQ, he didn't ask me one question. And I was almost mad, because I was ready to get 100 on this test. But the real test came in the productivity, when he saw that I went from probably like maybe a level 3 to a level 7. He knew that I got the message. If I want to be a real writer, I have to be a real reader. And that's what I actually tell young men and women now. So, and he told me this lesson almost 40 years ago.
Well, your writing actually has purpose to it that I think most people can relate to. I'm really interested in reading the series that you wrote. I mean, there are 5 books, and you read 5 books, and then you wrote 5 books. I think that the series is very inspiring, at least the titles are. I can see the cohesion between the cohesiveness of the actual series and how it would be beneficial, I think, for anybody, any young person, any older person, anyone that feels they're going to be on the planet for a few more minutes would benefit from this series. You seem to have had a process.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because the process is somewhat severalfold. One process was sticking with it. In other words, being committed to a task and staying with it regardless. I mentioned this. I started writing this book October 17, 1983. It didn't get published until November of 1992. So it was 9 years. It didn't take me 9 years to finish it. It took me 9 years to get it published, because I couldn't find a publisher that would take a chance on me. Now, what was interesting was, the first 9 drafts were written by hand. I literally wrote by hand, because I didn't have a typewriter. I didn't have anything to type on. And my mother was working for IBM too, but she finally got enough extra money to buy me a typewriter so that I can type. And then I was also used to writing that it took me several months to really actually type, because I couldn't type. So I took a typing course in school to get better. And so what was so profound was that over the 9-year period, I got rejected over 40 times. I literally got rejected 42 times. The 43rd time that I tried, that I found a publisher. He was a young man at the time, of course. He said that he would publish it if I can promise to sell 500 copies. So in other words, if I can guarantee at least 500 sales, he would print up 1,000. copies. Now, I thought that was too good to be true, so I had him write it, send it to me in writing. Now, because I was probably so traumatized because I got so many rejection letters, that when the letter finally came, it took me about 2 days before I answered it. You know what I mean? Because you would have thought that when I saw it in the mail, I would just open it before I even got upstairs. I was like, nope. I put this thing on a table and let it sit there for like 2 days because I had been rejected so many times. I was like, okay, this is probably just going to be something that, now I'm going to say he was lying to me, but I was thinking that he might have changed his mind and decided to say no. So I finally got up enough energy and muster to open a letter, and to my pleasure, it was there. He said what he said. It was in the letter. And I signed off on the contract, and between churches, the people that was in my neighborhood, family members, and even strangers, I must have sold about 1,000 copies within 3 months. Well, 3 to 5 months, I sold about 1,000 copies. Not 500, 1,000. So that first run was gone. The premise of the book itself is about making choices. It started out as somewhat of an anti-drug campaign, but it got bigger than that because I realized that teenagers, young people, and old go through a myriad of issues that sometimes lead them into certain things that might can hurt them. And so what I was trying to do was come up with a scenario where friends help each other out, regardless whether, especially when you're telling the truth about something, whether you like it or not, you know, a good friend will help you make the right choice. And you can even fight over it. I don't mean fist fight, but, you know, argue and big over it. But if a good friend is telling you, hey, man, don't go down that street because it's a wild dog in that third house, and you decide to go anyway, or you say, well, I'm going to go anyway, and the friend tries to stop you because he doesn't want you to get eaten up by a dog, then and you may even get pushback over it. But that's what friends are for. Friends are not going to purposely let you fall. And so that's why the concept of My Friend, My Hero came about, of the title, because I had a basketball player named Bennett Wilson, and I made him sort of this big magnanimous figure, and his best friend Kirby. Now, it was funny because it's a fictional character, but when people read it, they think that they know somebody like that, or they would like that themselves. And so it's probably more in the guise of realistic fiction than just fiction, because I would say 99.9% of people who read it think it's a true story. But again, it's about making choices and social and emotional learning, which is a powerful buzzword in schools now, wasn't back then, but the book really caters to that, to where young men and young women can read it and really have something to really think about. Now, I even put curriculum behind each book where I put questions and answers back there. Now, I'm sorry, not the answers, but I put essay questions in the back of the book along with topics of discussion, so that if a parent wanted to talk to their children about drugs or alcohol or even teenage pregnancies and different things of that nature, sometimes parents don't know how to broach subjects to kids or to their children, even their own children. Sometimes they don't know how to do it. But hey, if the child read the book and y'all had some sort of a family literacy thing, he or she wouldn't mind being open, because they could be talking about the character of the book as opposed to maybe themselves. But you can sort of do some workarounds behind that. Also did it for young men and women that were like me, that weren't readers in school, that wanted to just get by, but you still needed a heavy level of comprehension. So I figured that this could be a good way of having a book report done, because it's not a long book. It's a pretty short read, but it's a powerful read. And if you notice, each book and title have the word hero in it.
Yes, every single one.
Right. And I did that for a reason, because I want young men and women to be able to relate to these people in these books, but they're not seeing anybody with a cape on. They're not seeing anybody with a mask on. They're not seeing anybody with a white hat on. They're not seeing anybody jumping over tall buildings and all that kind of good stuff. They're regular people that go to school, go to work, and just live life every day. And they're doing heroic things because they're just being responsible. Because I think sometimes, TQ, the best heroes are the ones that lead themselves the right way. And I wanted people to be able to reflect that by reading my book series and learning from that.
I like that term you use, that lead themselves the right way.
Yeah, because peer pressure is a monster, right? And I don't know percentages, but I can hazard a guess that there was a great number of people that are sitting in jail right now because they went with the crowd, because of peer pressure. where they had the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 20th sense that told them, don't go with them, don't go with them, don't go with them. But you so scared to be by yourself that you went with them anyway, because you didn't want to be an outcast. You didn't want to be this. You want to be called this, or what do you call that? Sometimes you got to be learn how to be by yourself and just live life with yourself. And I'm not talking about being lonely or being a Howard Hughes type of hermit, if you would. But sometimes walking down the street alone is, put it this way, walking down the street alone in peace beats walking down the street with a group of people in chaos. But people don't realize that because they're afraid of their own shadows, if you would. People can look in the mirror every day, but don't see themselves. They just look in the mirror, but they're not actually looking at themselves. But they don't see themselves. You know what I mean?
They
don't recognize the person they even see in the mirror. And I think that is one of the worst ways of living, because you can get tossed to and fro with things. Peer pressure is so big that you have certain people that won't become as smart as they want to be because friends around them aren't that smart. I don't use the word smart, but maybe aren't that studious. So, but yet you'll kill your own dream because other people around you don't take reading and writing and hitting the books the way you do. That's big.
That is big. That's huge. And I agree with you. I have to say, before we started this interview, I was talking to Jim about your books, and I had shared with him that when I was growing up, I had a grandfather. One of my grandfathers told me always to make friends with people that are smarter than you or know something that you don't know, that you need to learn. Don't be friends with people that you know are not as smart as you are. It's very judgmental, I would say. But what do you think of something like that?
Well, I understand. It's funny because I'm getting to a collaborative thing with some people that actually my book is going to become a curriculum as well. But I'm getting with some really higher level educators than I am, right? Because they actually know how to do curriculum. I don't know how to do curriculum. I have the dream of doing it, but they actually know how to do it. So I prided myself in using sort of a metaphor of being the dumbest person in the room. Because my thinking is, if I'm around these four or five people that actually know how to do something that I'm trying to do, then I'm going to learn all day, every day. You know what I mean? And it doesn't make me dumb per se, but it actually allows me to become humble and enlightened at the same time, because I'm not trying to sound like I'm better than you all. I'm not trying to, and I'm not necessarily saying I'm worse than you all, but you have something that I actually want or need to make my products work best. It wouldn't profit me to be with five or six beginners and tell them to help me do something that neither of us know what to do. We'll just be walking around in a circle. But if I get with people that know what they're doing, that been doing this for a good time, good long while, or just even if they just started out, they know what they're doing because they trained themselves or got trained to do it, then it's a win. So yeah, I've heard that statement before about being the dumbest person in the room. It doesn't make you dumb. It just makes you like, okay, there's some people that are doing something that I want to achieve or get have done, and it's okay that they know something that I don't know. I'll win.
Yes, you win. I think it's actually a smart thing to do. I think women, African-American people, any kind of, let's say, person of color, minorities, occasionally would find themselves in a room where the culture is completely different than yours, but yet you're learning something because you're there and you're the only person in the room that's gaining any knowledge, and them not realizing necessarily that they could gain some knowledge from you. So what do you find that the response of the reader is to your book? Have you ever had a chance to talk to people, youth or even adults? I know that I read somewhere that you said the book is for readers from 8 years old to 80 years old.
A couple of things. That's a good question, too. If you go on Goodreads and pull up my books, or if you go on Amazon, but Goodreads are really, I've been noticing some reviews on Goodreads that almost brought tears to my eyes. I mean, some of the reviews that I'm getting on Goodreads are so powerful because the reviewers are actually saying what I aspire the book to do. Be something that parents could talk to their children about. Be something that schools can use. Teachers can use it with students. Be something that friends could talk to each other about. you know, the reviews that I'm getting have been so powerful. It's almost overwhelming because what I set out to do is actually happening. Now, I'm going to tell you where I get my real biggest compliments from, are from non-reading youth. Mm-hmm. Non-reading youth. When a young man or even young woman would tell me, Mr. Hoover, reading is not my thing, but I couldn't put your book down. And I'm like, wow. And I've heard that a lot. And I'm going to tell you a quick story that I've gotten. And my regret is, and I hope maybe she's listening, I don't know. But there was a woman that I had met. I was at a function. I didn't get her name. And I'm so sorry I did, because she had told me something. This had to be probably 20 years ago by now. And she said, Mr. Hoover, thank you for writing your book. And I said, thank you. I said, you're welcome. She said, no, you don't understand. Thank you for writing your book. I said, okay. And she said, I have a son that doesn't like to read, but I had gotten your book for him. And I said, I want you to read it. And at first it gave me some resistance, but then as he started reading it, he gained more and more respect for, attached to it. And so one day, late in the evening, it was time for him to go to bed, and he wanted to read another chapter. And she was torn, because her thinking was, I should make my son, you know, he should go to bed now because it's time for him to go to bed, or do I let him read this book because he doesn't like to read? So she said, okay, I'll give you until, you know, maybe I said a half hour, finish this chapter, and then I go to bed. And she said, okay, Mom, thanks. So about an hour later, she was going back to the back room to see, you know, make sure her son is sleeping good or what have you. And she said this, that she went to the back room, and as she was walking to the room, she saw the room was dark because the TV and the light was out. But what she didn't know, until she realized it, was her son had put himself under the covers with a flashlight.
Oh, wow.
And was still reading the book.
That's classic.
Classic. And TQ, I remember the story. I don't remember the woman's name because I was at a function, and I'm so sorry I did that. But like I said, radio land, TV land, wherever you are, if she ever hears this, please contact me, because that is something that I would have given her son my second book on a house. You know what I mean? I really would. I would just say, here, take the second one and the third one. But just to hear a mother tell me that was so powerful.
It's quite a tribute to you.
Thank you.
In other words, you're able to engage his mind to that extent, to take someone that doesn't read and get them reading. It's very heartwarming, because I've heard people, even adults, say they don't read. I don't want to feel that there's a shame in it, but the shame is that they don't read, is they're missing out on so much. You know, yeah. Even if you read on your device, you know, I really do believe in any which way you can get the words in your head, you know, is okay. I mean, I read on devices, I read actual books too, but I really commend you for being able to grasp a mind like that. A total stranger. You're reaching a total stranger through your words. Now, let me ask you one quick question, though. I noticed that the book is beautifully illustrated.
This is the seventh edition. Because now, I told you I got rejected by 40 different publishers. Well, publishers, between publishers, agents, and editors, I was rejected 43 times, right? Now, the first book that came out didn't look anything like this. Now, the book has been published by 5 different publishers, because when the first guy took it, I was doing really well with him. But the kind of books he published, overall, it didn't cater toward anyone but Black people. And so he would publish books with titles, I don't want to use the N-word, but like, say, you know, from N-words to gods and this, that, and the third, you know, white man's the devil. I mean, you know, he published those kind of books.
Wow.
The issue with that is, if I was trying to get the catalog in schools, it wouldn't work. Because no school's in America is going to look at that as a, you know, that publishing company as a publishing company that they want to work with.
Right.
So I made them some money, but I was able to get out of the contract. And then I found a publisher by the name of Winston Derrick Publishers. And they were the publishers of, if you have a Black Bible at home, they published it, Winston Derrick. And so they took me on. They made money off of me because I was publishing in schools, but they went out of business. But it wasn't from me, because I was making money for them. Then I found some other publishers. So I ended up having like 5 publishers since the first one. Well, after the first one, I had like 4 or 5 more publishers. Then I just said, you know what? I'm gonna get it done myself. So I became my own publishing company, and I hired several editors that would get it to an expert level, so that when you read the book, you're not gonna see a whole lot of mistakes and typos and grammatical inaccuracies and so forth and so on. So I made sure it was good, and it was important to me, TQ, because I'm writing a book as a black man. So I already know, I hate to use that word, but I already know that I'm in a minority. So my position was, I'm going to hit them hard, and I'm going to hit them often. And even with the illustration, if you go through Amazon or what have you, you can see different publications of the book. But I think this one's the best one, because I was able to get with the illustrator that I wanted, you know, to my liking. And I was able to go through the models and different things of that nature to my liking. So even though I had publishers that published for me, they gave me the latitude to give them a blueprint of what I wanted on the cover. And so I was blessed to do that. And this cover, I think, is very attractive. Even on the eyes, the colors, I think, are very attractive as well.
The colors are very appealing. The colors draw you in. Do you want to give the illustrator a shout out here?
Jennifer Givner is my illustrator. Jennifer Givner, and this is Givner. She's out in California, and she's a great illustrator, and she puts it together. So she illustrated all four of my books. My Friend, My Hero. He Was My Hero Too, A Hopeful Hero, and Hoop Hero.
Tell me about, and I'm reluctant to even mention it only because of something that happened sort of in the news today. You have one of the books of the five is called A Fallen Hero. I watched a funeral on TV of a fallen hero. And I was thinking about his children so much. And he didn't have any, his nieces, nephews, the funeral last week. I was thinking about that family and the young people in that family, and they were young people themselves, the fallen heroes. Mm-hmm. Tell me about this particular edition of the series.
It's a story of redemption, because there's a character that was one way in book one, and in book three, which you're talking about, he sort of turns life around. Well, on book two, he actually turns life around. Book three, something had happened, but I'm giving too much away.
You don't have to.
Yeah, it was sort of on a redemption. The word's hero, and if you look at the word hero in each title, and if you look at the cover of each book, there's something that either you're going to see on someone's T-shirt, or you're going to see a sign other than the title somewhere on that book. Mm-hmm. Usually you're going to see it on one of the characters' T-shirt, that it's a symbol on it. And the what's written on the T-shirt for you to see is definitely there by design.
I'm really excited for you, you know, Gerald, with this series. You know, I really believe, from what I'm hearing and what I've said and the bit that I've read, and I haven't had the opportunity to read much of it, just more about it and maybe snippets of it, but I think that it's destined to become an American classic. I think centuries from now, I really feel that way. Kind of like, you know, I won't mention any other books, sure, but I see it as being in that realm of, like, you know, early 21st century African-American literature, must read in high school 100 years from now, 50 years from now, maybe even 25 years from now.
Thank God that you said that, from your mouth to God's ears and to the whole universe. And I'm going to tell you what I did to add to that, TQ. The book's now written for, say, maybe sixth grade on up, right? Now, what I did do was, the same characters, they weren't born 18 years old. They weren't born 20. They weren't born 19. You know what I mean? They weren't born teenagers. So what I did was, I gave them life as toddlers. So I expanded the hero book series to where these same characters are breathing life through books as toddlers. So I have a pre-K to K book called A Basketball Hero's Born. And then I have a first grade to second grade book that's called A Hero's Pride. They have a third grade to fourth grade book that's called The Hero Shot, which is, the shot is basketball shot. And then the one to fifth grade to sixth grade is called A Proven Hero. And you notice every title has the word hero in it.
Yes.
But what I'm doing is, I want it so that young people can actually grow up with this book, right? The same way some other books are do something similar to that. I want young men and women to be able to grow up with this book. So, of course, a pre-K to K book will probably be a read-aloud book, the parent can read that to the children, or the teacher reads it to the children. But then the same characters, Bennett Wilson, will go from kindergarten to first grade, second grade, third grade, and so forth and so on. So that's been so powerful. And the first two books written for the children, of the children's series, A Basketball Hero's Born and A Hero's Pride, those books will probably be out, I would say, before March or April.
Soon.
Yeah, because I'm done with the content. Now I'm sending it back over to the publisher. I'm using a publisher on this one to get the illustrations done. But then I'm also looking to, with those four books, build a cross. So you notice what I said pre-K to K, first to second, third to fourth, fifth to sixth. So with that, those are four books. Now I'm going to build a cross. So now I may have maybe five or six books that's catering with the pre-K to K. Then I may have four books for the first, second grade. Because if you're in school, you have four marking periods. Then from third and fourth grade, I'll probably use four more books as well. But with the fifth and sixth grade book, I'm probably going to just have two books because they'll directly link you into My Friend, My Hero, which is the first book of the original Hero series.
Well, I'll say that you know more about curriculum than you realize. It seems to be it's like inherent. You really sound like you know about curriculum and the way you're writing. And I can appreciate, as an educator myself, I can appreciate the fact that you're actually writing to the curriculum of each grade age group. You're contributing to it in a positive way. I think that's a beautiful thing, Gerald.
Thank you, TQ, and I really appreciate that. What my premise was when I wrote that speech in 1983 was to save a life, to help enhance a life, to help empower a life. And that's been what my writing is all about. It's been all about that. There are messages in there. Some of them are subliminal, and some of them are like a poster, you know, or a billboard, right? So I'm trying to help young men and women, particularly those of color, because, well, I just did a study where I saw some research. I saw something that said in the penal system, young adults, youth, 85% of them are functionally illiterate.
Oh, my God.
TQ, that means at every 10, maybe one or one and a half isn't functionally illiterate. So out of 10 youth, 8 to 9 are functionally illiterate. The 10 youth that are incarcerated.
Well, that's got to, we have to make that change somehow.
This shows you what this leads to. If you don't have education, it's actually leading you to either early grave or jail. It's not working for us. If we cannot read and write and process things, TQ, it's not going to help us.
This is true.
It's not going to help us. And then Eric Adams, the new mayor, that just got newly elected into office in New York City, he mentioned about maybe 3 weeks ago now that 50% of the inmates in Rikers have learning disabilities. Something is awry here.
Yeah.
Something's not right. But yet, you see all these young men and women with these cell phones playing with them 24 hours a day. You see these games that people are playing with on their phones or coming home with the control. And they playing these games 5 and 6, 7 hours a day. But they cannot write a sentence properly.
Yeah, no, it is scary. I just remember, I'll just say one time someone asked me what time it was and I pointed to the clock and it was a regular analog clock. And she said, and this was like a 16-year-old, I don't know how to read that. I have no idea what that means. And it just scared me. You know, it did. It scared me a little bit. You know, and I think about it once in a while and, you know, wonder how I can help. But you know something, Joe, you're going to come back on the show. I just said you are. I just declared it because okay. you've written another series and you're telling me that it's going to be released in March or April. Yeah, that's perfect. I have to thank you so much for doing something that seriously helps people. You know, it's not just empathy. It's not just sympathy. And someone wrote about this on LinkedIn. You might have seen that post recently. It's compassion. It's when you actually feel these things and then you actually do something about it. And mm-hmm. So I have to really thank you. I'm very, very moved by what you do.
Well, thank you.
And I thank you so much for reaching out to me. Next time I'll ask you about the sports writing because I know you're a sports writer.
I love it.
So you'll have to come back because there's not enough time left for us right now. And I'm going to wish you a happy new year. I think I can still say that.
Oh, sure, sure.
I think today is actually the Lunar New Year.
Right.
Yeah, it is. You know, and so I feel that that's when things start to blossom and grow. And I really believe that your book series and your writing and your audience, you know, is going to just grow and grow and grow. At least that's what I would declare on it for you. Thank you.
I accept it. Thank you.
And I need to find out from you, Gerald, how can someone contact you and where can they buy your books?
Sure. I have a website. It's called The HeroBookSeries.com, all right? And the word the is important.
The Hero Book Series.
My books are everywhere online, from Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target, Amazon, you name it. I think it's something called BAD. So my books are all over. You may not find it physically in the bookstores, but all over the spectrum they're there. You can even buy them from my website. If you go to theherobookseries.com and go to the tab that says books, not only will you can buy the books, but you can also see a trailer of each book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So when you go to the website and you see trailer, press that button and it kind of gives you a little 90-second movie on what the book is about.
TheHeroBookSeries.com. Okay? Be there or be square. That's what my daddy used to say.
Love it.
Anyway, thank you so much, Gerald. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story. And then you have a lot more to talk about. I can tell.
Absolutely.
You do. And so we'll be hearing from you again. And I'll tell my audience good night. And thank you so much for coming to the Energy Stoners Cafe. And please feel free to email me with any feedback you have, or you can look me up on linkedin.com and give me the feedback. I'd love to hear it. I'll see you next time, everyone. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.